When a young child sustains minor head trauma, guidelines vary, and there's no clear consensus regarding radiologic examination to attempt to detect the presence of skull fracture. Most cases of head trauma are minor, but some of these so-called minor cases can be associated with life-threatening complications, especially if a fracture goes undetected. I'm Dr. Ken Flagel, Senior Editor for CMAJ, and today I'm speaking with Dr. Jocelyn Gravel, Pediatric Emergency Physician and a Research Director at Saint-Justine Hospital in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. In their CMAJ research article concerning a decision rule for head trauma in young children, Dr. Gravel and colleagues performed a prospective cohort study in an effort to provide guidance for radiologic evaluation of young children who have sustained head trauma. Dr. Gravel, the first question I'd like to ask you is for the benefit of the non-pediatrician, how on earth does a child younger than 2 months sustain head trauma?
Well, this is very, very common. Every shift that a pediatric emergency physician works, he sees at least one and sometimes three or four patients that fell from the table, from the changing table, from the bed. A very young kid, younger than 2 years, and especially younger than 1 year old, that fall from their chair is very common. Happily, most of them, they have just a small bruise or nothing. But there's a small proportion who have more important complication. And this is what we wanted to do with our study.
And when we have an adult with a skull fracture, we usually make note of it and keep an eye on them. But that's about it. Why is it important to identify skull fracture in a young infant?
Well, there are two main reasons. The first reason is skull fracture is associated with a traumatic or clinically important traumatic brain injury. So if you have a skull fracture and you're a small kid, most of the time you won't have nothing and it's not bad. But the odds ratio of having clinically important brain injury is about 12. So this is the most important predictor of a clinically important traumatic injury. So that's why if you find a skull fracture in a small kid, you better keep an eye on that kid for 12 to 24 hours or do a CT scan depending on what setting you are. This is the first reason. And the other reason is there's something called growing fracture that occurs in very small kids. Because the small kids, they have their sutures. So when the brain grows, the skull grows. But if they have a fracture, this fracture could continue to expand. And there could be an herniation of the brain through that fracture, and the fracture won't heal. So this is something we see in very young children, younger than 1 or younger than 2 years old, because they are small and their brain is growing fast. When you're an adult and you have a skull fracture, well, your brain is not supposed to grow, so the fracture will heal easily. And the reason why it's important to identify those patients is if you find a skull fracture that is very wide and is prone for a growing fracture, if you find it very early in the first week, the neurosurgeon will do a small suture on the dura mater and will make sure that there won't be any growing fracture. But if you missed it and there's a herniation of brain, then there's very high risk of complication like seizure, mental retardation. So if you don't find it, you will have a very big problem. And if you find it, there's something that is easy to do for a neurosurgeon to prevent it. Only 2% of the fracture could have a growing fracture. So it's very uncommon. And if you take 1,000 kids, there should be about 50 fracture. 1,000 kids younger than 2 years old who falls. Among those 50 fracture, with 2% of growing fracture, there will be one with growing fracture. So out of 1,000 kids, if you don't do an x-ray to nobody, well, you're probably right 99.9% of the time. But the one you missed, if you miss it, the patient will have seizure, mental retardation, a very bad outcome. So once you miss one, then you'll do the x-ray for all the other patients because you don't want to miss any of these. So that's why we decided to do our clinical decision rule.
And why did you decide to approach the problem in this way?
The idea came 4 years ago when we went to a conference at the Quebec Emergency Physician Conference. There was one guy who was presenting their guidelines at the Montreal Children's Hospital. And basically what he was saying was that they were doing x-rays for almost all kids younger than 1 year old with a head trauma. And 1 week later, there was the conference of the emergency physician, but the specialist in emergency medicine in Quebec again. And there was another guy from another city who was presenting exactly the contrary, saying that you don't need to do x-rays because we don't do much for those patients. So in 1 week, there were two specialists who were presenting exactly the opposite. So this is when we said, well, probably if two specialists present exactly the opposite, it's probably because there is no clear answer about this question. So this is when we decided to do the study and to derive a rule to say, well, which kid would need an x-ray? And the best outcome would be not only the fracture, but the fracture who will have a bad outcome. So those with growing fracture or those with traumatic brain injury that needs something. But it's so uncommon to do that kind of study. We would need something like 50,000 patients. So what we decided to do is we said, well, we'll do a study to identify all skull fracture. And every time you derive a rule, it's never 100% sensitive. There's always confidence interval. So we say if we have a rule that is very sensitive for all fracture, there is very high chance that it is more sensitive to clinically important skull fracture.
And who did you study? How did you accumulate your study population?
Well, we did the study in three settings, St. Justine Hospital in Montreal, Montreal Children's Hospital, and Sherbrooke University Hospital. And we recruited all children younger than 2 years old who came for a head trauma in the past 24 hours. So because there is a bias, if you also take those who came for a trauma that was longer than 24 hours, probably they are sicker. That's why they consult. Otherwise, they wouldn't come. And we excluded all the children who already needed a CT scan because they had moderate or severe traumatic brain injury. Because we said, well, if they already need a CT scan because they are unconscious, we don't need to discuss do they need an x-ray or not. So we excluded those who needed a CT scan for moderate or severe traumatic brain injury, mild traumatic brain injury, who needed a CT scan according to the rules that are already used for brain injury. So in our setting, we used a rule called the Picarn rule, which says that you're at high risk of traumatic brain injury if you have a moderate or severe TBI, or if you have a mild TBI, but a Glasgow of 14, or deformity, a very important deformity on your skull. We also exclude patients who were transferred to our setting with their x-rays already done, showing that they had a fracture. Because we said that the person who was filling the chart review form, chart report form, if they already knew that the kids would have a fracture before they do it, they could be biased. So basically, younger than 2 years old, head trauma, no need for CT scan on the Picarn rule.
And for the babies in your study, how were the skull fractures detected?
So ideally, we'd do an x-ray, but it was not ethically feasible to do an x-ray on all kids. So we decided to let the physician do whatever they want. In our setting, the proportion of x-ray is about 40%. So we said, you do what you want. We would like you to make sure that you don't never miss fractures. So if you have any doubt, do probably more x-rays than you would do in the real life. And all the kids who didn't have an x-ray, they were called 1 month later by a research assistant to see if they had any bad outcome, if they needed to see a physician again, if they had any x-rays. So it's not the perfect gold standard as having everybody who would have a skull x-ray, but we wanted to make sure that if at 1 month they don't have a growing fracture, usually it would be detected after 1 month, probably because they healed well and we didn't care that much if we missed a fracture or two because of that. And of all the patients that we called, nobody had any complication.
How did you go about deriving your decision rule?
First of all, we had 28 criteria that were defined by systematic review of the literature and opinion of experts. And of those 28 criteria, we said, well, we will take those who have a good inter-rater agreement. So for a convenient sample of patient, there was a second physician who was evaluating the child. filling the same CRF, and we measured the inter-rater agreement, and we decided that those who had an agreement with a kappa score higher than 0.6 would be amenable to the decision rule. So we excluded a few criteria based on this item, and then we used recursive partitioning to identify skull fracture.
And what did you find?
So what we found in the derivation phase, we had 111 child. Among them, we had 49 fractures. And the two criteria were very strong predictors of fracture. The first criteria was the presence of a bump or a swelling or hematoma on the skull, on the parietal or occipital bone.
Did the size of the swelling or the hematoma matter?
It didn't change much. So any bump, any size on the parieto-occipital hematoma, positive predictive value of that is 40%. So out of we had 49 fracture, 38 were identified just with this criteria, and only 94 patients had that criteria out of the 800 patients. So it was very good criteria. And then the second criteria was the age. Children age 0 to 1 month, and when I say 1 month, I mean 59 days, was the second criteria. So using both of these criteria, we identified 46 out of the 49 fracture. So this provided a sensitivity of 94% and a specificity of 86%, with a predictive value of 31% and a negative predictive value of almost 100%, because there were only 3 fracture out of 600 kids who were negative for the rule.
You said 1 month and 59 days. I think you mean 2 months.
Younger than 2 months.
Yes, 1 month old. Okay, I see what you mean. So this is how you arrived at the criteria for the derivation set.
Mm-hmm.
And then you went and did a second phase.
The plan was to recruit until we had 50 fractures and then to continue recruitment for the validation phase. So we stopped the recruitment at the derivation phase. We took those patients and we derived the rule, and we continued the recruitment in all the settings to validate those criteria. I said we had 49 fracture because we thought we had 50, but when we reviewed the x-rays, one was finally defined as not fracture. So that's why we had 49 fracture. And in the validation, what we said, we applied the same criteria to our validation set. So in our validation phase, we had 856 patients. Among them, 44 had a fracture. The sensitivity of the rule in this group was 89% because it identified 41 patients with a fracture. The specificity was quite high, 87%, so quite similar with the derivation, and a positive predictive value, 26%, negative predictive value, 99%. So we missed only 3 fracture in the validation phase using that rule. We think it's a good rule. In the validation phase, there were 4 fracture that were missed. I said 3, but there were 4. And of these 4 fracture, 3 were for children age 2 or 3 months old. So we said, now we're going to try to validate that rule in multiple primary care settings in Quebec. That's our plan in the long term. But we'll try to see if we increase our age range to 3 months. Does it change much on the sensitivity and specificity? But this is the next phase of our research program.
In your opinion, is this rule ready for general use by pediatric urgentologue?
I think it's very easy to use. It's very user-friendly. I think we validate it. It's only 44 fracture, but it's 800 patients. I think it's amenable to general pediatrician or even emergency physician or even physician that are in their office and they see kids. I think they can use it. It was studied in our setting, which is a tertiary care pediatric emergency medicine setting, but there were more than 40 physicians in our setting that used the rule in the derivation and validation phase, and it was the same at the children and at Sherbrooke. So there was about 80 different physicians who used the rule, and we didn't see any problem. And the inter-rater agreement was almost perfect.
Final question. I'm wondering about applying this rule in the third world where resources are really scarce. Could you comment on generalizing your work to non-North American child populations?
Well, I think it could be used anywhere. Of course, in settings where they have less technology that we have, this study will probably be more helpful, because if they have to transfer patients for a long distance to do an X-ray, it's important for them to decrease these numbers of X-rays. And it's a bit the same in our settings. The rule for tertiary care emergency physician, well, the rule is useful, but doesn't change that much, because we have access to X-rays, and most of them, they won't complain if we do X-ray. There are fees, there is a little bit of radiation, but it's not that bad to do an X-ray. So we could do X-ray to all the patients, but it would be not a good way of using resources. But for primary care physician in their office where they don't have an X-ray, and if they'd have to send the patient to the emergency room or a radiology facility, it can be very time consuming. So using the rule in the offices or place where they don't have X-ray, this is the place where the rule could be the most useful, because it could identify those who really need an X-ray and those who can wait and be sent home safely.
Dr. Gravel, thank you.
You're welcome.
I've been speaking with Dr. Jocelyn Gravel, pediatric emergency physician and research director at Saint-Justine Hospital in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. To read the research article he co-authored, visit our website at cmaj.ca.